Anybody have anything to talk about?
Anyone else come?
Yeah. After Bob's sleep last night, I was all strung out. Went home, tried to start a fight with Jackie. Kind of unsuccessful.
Succeeded.
Well, I made her cry anyway, so I was successful. But I felt like just less than married. Since last night. Just
you felt what?
Less than married. But it seemed more than just something that just happened. It seemed like it was kind of something that had been going on for a long time. You know, that we find ourselves acting weird or doing things or playing games with each other. And, well, but now that we've seen that, we'll stop doing it or something like that, you know. But last night after the preaching, it just seemed like it made me feel really desolate. I don't know why. I mean, I suppose it's because I haven't mourned. And I don't know how to do it. You know?
You know what you want?
Well, I mean, if that's what it takes to move on in this process, then I want it to be done. And that's how I feel about it. I mean, a lot of things have happened in the past, and I haven't liked them necessarily, but it seemed like they were necessary.
Let's go some basics. Go to 2 Corinthians 5. I hate basics. No, deny that.
Oh, growing.
Go to Mark 8:34.
What, are you just giving us a test? Oh, yeah. Yes. Didn't they find it?
No, no, it's moving way back Mark to real what? Basic stuff. Back in Mark.
Mark what? I don't think this is like an order of
Mark.
In that case,
let's go
to Mark. Yeah, in that case, let's go back to Genesis. Where are you?
Mark 8, starting verse 27. Mark 8, verse 27. And Jesus went out and his disciples into the towns of Caesarea Philippi. And by the way, he asked his disciples, saying unto them, Whom do men say that I am? And they answered, John the Baptist, but some say Elijah, and others one of the prophets. And he saith unto them, But whom say ye that I am? And Peter answereth and saith unto him, Thou art the Christ. And he charged them that they should tell no man of him. The announcement that thou art the Christ is so universal yet so personal that nothing else in the Bible makes any sense until you can first say, Thou art the Christ. The Christ means the desired one, the hope, the everything that you could possibly ever wish for, that you could ever desire, that you could ever believe for, that you could ever want, that you could ever think about wanting. That's what the meaning of the word Christ is. It's not just some religious term, it's a personal term, and unless you understand the personal aspect of that term, nothing else in the scriptures will make any sense, and you just become a religious idiot. Thou art the Christ. And still externalized. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
And he began to teach them that the Son of Man. And we look, to refer this to the star charts, we look and we see that throughout the star charts there's this strange group of creatures that were half beast and half man. Now a mystery has taken place that's true for every culture, that somehow this Messiah, this Christ, this Son of Man had to be two natures, one a beast, like the human race. Ezekiel says, you're just like a beast. I mean, Ecclesiastes says, you're not just like one, you are a beast. But there's a second nature to you, or a second aspect to you. And I'd ask, the Son of Man is the beast. The Son of God is the Christ. He began to teach them that the Son of Man, the beast, must suffer many things and be rejected of the elders and of the chief priests and scribes and be killed, and after 3 days rise again. And he spake that saying openly, and Peter took him and began to rebuke him. But when he had turned about, he looked on his disciples, and he rebuked Peter, saying, Get thee behind me, Satan, for thou savorest not the things that be of God, but the things that be of men. You are exactly in the same position that Christ was at some point along this mystery line between his birth at Bethlehem and his baptism. You understand that? Christ was two natures from his birth to his baptism. And there was this constant, unending struggle within him between Son of Man and Son of God. Unceasing struggle. Same thing you're experiencing. Same exact thing that's happening to you. It's a personalized phenomenon. The moment Christ's mind, the moment Peter, the one upon whose confession the church was built, savored the things of Son of Man, protecting self, protecting any part of Son of Man, then Christ called him Satan. In the same way, the moment you would protect you or yours, Christ would call you Satan. You got that? And when he had called the people unto him with his disciples also, he said unto them, Whosoever will come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. For whosoever shall save his life shall lose it. But whosoever shall lose his life for my sake and the gospel's, the same shall save it. For what shall it profit a man if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Now we begin to understand the mystery. You must deny, or the Greek word is aphrodiomai, which means give no thought for yourself at all, and pick up your cross. Your cross isn't your mother-in-law. Your cross is always and ever symbolic of your acceptance of death. Now, because of the way in which you're made, you have to pick up the cross daily. Now, the reason that Christ had to go to the cross was so the Son of Man would go to the cross. The reason you have to go to the cross is so the Son of Man in you will go to the cross. You got it? Now go to 2 Corinthians 5. For whether we be beside ourselves, it is to God, or whether we be sober, it is for your cause. The word beside yourself or beside ourselves there means crazy. It means you're outside of a position that God has defined as normality. Now, God defined normality in a strange way. God says normality, by this definition, is when you don't think about yourself. If you're in any other position, where you're thinking about yourself, where God would call you crazy, then even in that position, it's to God. If you're sober, the word meaning normal, from a spiritual standpoint, you can only exist for another person. It's for your cause. Everything is outward. There's no independent self in your awareness. There is the total and complete lack of the I motive in every thought, word, and deed of your life. If you're not in that position, according to Paul, you're crazy. You're beside yourself. If I am outside myself, if I am beside myself, if I am in a position other than which God calls the normal state, it's to God. If I am sober or normal, it's for you. You got that? You're not there. What?
I feel the second thing about being for someone, for one person's sake, I'm clear on that. The thing about to God, I guess what I want to do is form an opinion whether that's good, bad, or indifferent. I don't know, but I don't know what it means to God. It means it's God's business. It's for God.
To God means that it is totally and completely God's business.
The word up to God in there.
Up to God. That's good.
So, like Matt said, and as I said to you at dinner, it's like since 10 o'clock last night, 99.999% of the time, I've been thinking about
me,
and it's like,
then it's up to God. In other words, you're crazy. You're abnormal. You belong in a spiritual funny farm. But it's God's funny farm. There's a long time ago, I interviewed a pastor from a Romanian church that was put in prison in Romania before his confession. And he was thought it was grandiose and everything for about the first few days. And then rats started crawling all over him. And he thought he was going crazy. And he remembered the scripture, and he says, if I'm crazy, I'm your crazy. Now, for most of you know that I've spent a great deal of the time since I've been a believer in mind-blowing pain. If I didn't know that if I may be in pain, but I'm yours in pain, I couldn't have made it. I couldn't have existed. I'd have killed myself. The pain was so intense. If you spend a second in self, if that's what you're compelled to do by the preaching, by your circumstances, by whatever stimulus comes to you, then that second you should realize that in this position I am God. You understand me? Mm-hmm. Stop trying to affect your own release.
Yeah, it's like you release the control of trying to maintain control of your situation.
Now, any of you would have been fools if you heard what I said last night and didn't spend a little time in introspection.
Kind of made me mad. It's like, we're not supposed to take any thought for ourselves, and he preaches that shit, and I go out of here and I'm...
Okay, if I can put you on that trip, just think what Satan could do.
Yeah.
God's intent, the only reason for time and space, is that you be tested. That's why preaching, through the foolishness of preaching, men are saved. If the hardest words that I can say to you don't put your eyes on yourself, then no one in the world can touch you.
Amen. Well, just to echo what you said, most of the day today I spent in an internal dialogue trying to exhort myself, trying to change the whole thing, and what it came down to was finally I realized it was like all I wanted to do was throw myself off a cliff. It's like the end, the only end of that is ended.
Well, the only end of it is I'm God's. But you see, the greatest, even in the natural terms, the greatest sign, if you were in a psychiatric hospital, that you were ready for health was the admission that you're crazy. You understand?
Yeah.
The moment that you understand that from a spiritual standpoint, the moment your eyes are on yourself, you're crazy, but I'm God's crazy, then there's freedom. Now watch. Whether we be beside ourselves, it is to God, or whether we be sober, it is for your cause. For the love, and the only reason he can say this is because of the following. For, or because, the love of Christ constraineth us. Because we thus judge that if one died for all, then we're all dead. If you could finally get it in your mind, once and for all time, that the human race died on the cross. Jesus Christ, according to Paul in Corinthians 15, was the last Adam. There's no more Adamic race. It's gone. There are only now vessels. And you're either a vessel of wrath, i.e. one that continues on in self-seeking, or a vessel of mercy. There's no other point. You're either a part of the bride or you're part of the whore. There's no other in-between position. You're a vessel for deity. And that deity is either the God of this world, where you will continue, and the evidence that you're a vessel for that deity is as long as the kingdom of self is advanced, Satan is happy. If it benefits you to do good, you will do good. If it benefits you to do evil, you will do evil. Unless you know that, the preaching of the cross is foolishness. Because otherwise you will try to save some good part of you. The love of Christ constraineth us, because we thus judge that if one died for all, then we're all dead. You got that? Can you believe that you're dead? Now let's go to Romans 6. Verse 3. Know ye not that so many of us as were baptized into Jesus Christ were baptized into his death. Therefore we are buried with him by baptism into death. Let's stop there a minute. If the one that's closest to me in body, soul, and spirit, right now that would be Tyra. If Tyra died, right now, I could do nothing but mourn. It wouldn't be an act of the will. The only thing it would require was that I saw that she was dead. As long as there was a possibility that she wasn't dead, i.e. was missing in action or something, then it would be impossible for me to mourn. And I would still live in the illusion that someday she would be found and I would be returned to her, or she would be returned to me in happiness and joy. Now the reason I picked on Tyra is because from a sensory standpoint, externalized, that's as close as I can get to the understanding of what I feel about myself. My mind tricks me all the time so that I don't really think about how in God's name would be possible for me to mourn for myself, even though I have know by intellect that I was dead, crucified with him on the cross, and I was buried with him in baptism. But until I can emotionalize those two acts, I can't mourn. You understand me? Don't worry about mourning. That'll be natural the moment you see what has happened. Now, I was very fortunate. In 1972, less than three months after I became a believer, my father died. And I had to go back to the family funeral. I didn't even like him. But most of you, I've told you this story before. I lost it. I broke down emotionally, just totally and completely wiped out. If I saw someone else in that position, I'd have thought they had a nervous breakdown. And then, by God's grace, he showed me what I was doing. That I wasn't mourning for my father. I was mourning for me. And so, I thank God, experienced that mourning 3 months, less than 3 months after I was a believer. Almost 16 years ago now. I don't know how that can happen for you. But I know that you first must see yourself crucified, second must see yourself buried in baptism, and third must mourn for that which has been killed and buried. Otherwise, your natural order of things from now until hell freezes over will be an attempt to save your life. You will continually try to seek to save your life.
But that's what you could do.
Your marriages, your relationships with everybody will always be on the basis of how does it benefit me? And the I will be the subject of every word and sentence and thought in your being. It doesn't matter if you come to Bible study for 500 years. Therefore, we are buried with him by baptism into death, that like as Christ was raised up from the dead by the glory of the Father, even so we should walk in newness of life. For if we have been planted together in the likeness of his death, we shall be also in the likeness of his resurrection. Unless you're able to do this, you'll be a Gnostic. You'll simply know about God, and you'll never experience it. At every stimulus, you'll be at a loss for words, or you'll become a huckster or a trickster in God's name. You can do nothing but try to appease the flesh, to try to make things nice. I don't care if you have to catalog it. For some of you, you will have to do that. You'll have to sit and write down the things that you are mourning for with regard to your own death and burial. I'm not asking you to change any part of your life. The battle is here. So that you can finally say that it's no longer I that live, but Christ who liveth in me, and the life I now live in the flesh, I live by the faith of the Son of God. It's Christ in you, the hope of glory. It's Christ no longer just in you, it's Christ as you living, because the Son of Man in you has been crucified, dead, and buried. And the moment you see who you are, it would be impossible for you to ever again try to seek to save your life.
Nothing we've ever talked about has made it clearer to me.
Again, please, if necessary, don't fall into sloth. Don't go in and fall into dispensationalism and say, well, I'll do this someday. You'll be deceived. There's no, do you understand it? The predicate is there's no demand for you to change anything. There's only a demand for you to see what has happened. You got to know it's true. You've tried everything else. What?
I come back to Dave's death again. My friend was killed a couple years ago. 4 years ago. I just remembered this thing tonight. I hadn't thought of this in ages. You know, somebody came up to me last night and said something about, you know, how do you mourn, or something like that, or somebody, or something. It was like, you know, when I got that phone call that he was dead, I didn't think, you know, well, how do I feel about this? Well, I don't remember. I just fell down on the floor and I stayed there until a lot later that day, like several hours. And then I got up and wandered around, and I went and wrote this thing down. I hadn't thought of this in years. I wrote down, well, if Dave's dead, then I can live. And I didn't understand. You know, I didn't know what that meant until now. I didn't understand what that meant. Huh? Because it was like, you know, that whole life just suddenly died.
Is this what was going, part of what was going on when after Christ's baptism, he went out in the wilderness for 40 days?
Well, let me answer that in a minute. Now, in Romans 6, we come to a position. Remember, I've told you so often about the difference between hoping, believing, and knowing. Well, there's another one. There's hoping, believing, knowing, and being. Now, the distance, well, there's another one. There's a skeptic, a scoffer, then a hoper, then a believer, then a knower, and then a beer. Now, the knowing is a pretty big step. In the spirit, again, everything in the Old Testament is just a picture of your subconscious mind. The scoffer is here in Egypt, the world. The hoper is after the plagues have come and you start making bricks with straw and nothing in your life works. Then what happens here? There's a baptism as you cross the sea. You become a believer. As you wander through the wilderness in a shed of the grave clothes. Then you enter the promise. You've changed from being a believer to a knower. And then you enter the New Jerusalem. And you change from being a knower to a beer. An I am. The Spirit, there's always, yeah. It's only one baptism, but it takes its form. Now go to verse 6. So we just got baptized, you understand? Now, verse 6. Knowing this, that our old man is crucified with him, that the body of sin might be destroyed, that henceforth we should not serve sin. Now that's not sin, for those of you who have been studying with us the book of Leviticus, the sin offering isn't for what you do. The sin offering is for what you are. After baptism, you are something different, a new thing, because the body of sin is destroyed.
It's impossible for you to sin after baptism. Behold the Lamb of God that has taken away the sin of the world. It's gone. He'll trespass, but now even the trespass has a new definition. The trespass is now simply the chastisement of God. Knowing. You've gone from a believer to a knower. For he that is dead is freed from sin. Now, if we be dead with Christ, we believe that we shall also live with him, knowing that Christ, being raised from the dead, dieth no more. Death hath no more dominion over him. Now, the only reason that you, the distance between a scoffer and the I am position is that quick. The only thing that takes place and the only reason time exists is to test that faith. To try it. That's why we glory in tribulation. That's why the trial of faith is what's precious. Faith is a dime a dozen. Have you heard me say 1,000 times? I don't give a damn about faith. To every man has been given faith. But it's the trial of faith without leaving that's precious. Now, since we're talking about the mourning process, that's why Christ said, "Blessed are they that mourn, for they shall be comforted." If you don't mourn, you can't be comforted. Because what you will be doing instead of mourning is you will be wishing for something to be different. That's the world's counterfeit of mourning.
Remorse.
It's remorse, wishing something was different. Wishing your status was different. Wishing you had more than you had. Wishing you didn't do that little thing you did last night. But, you might as well get it over with. I hate charts worse than lists. Make a chart if necessary. But sit down and see why you're mourning. You're dead. Therefore, all of my ideas, all of my ambitions, all of my plans, all of my everything are gone. Then, by faith, we declare from that moment forward, every thought is God, every act is God, every deed is God, every emotion is God, and you're free. But otherwise, you'll just be in this stupid mindset of the Gentile world who live in the vanity of their mind, always wanting more. Does this make sense? Do you understand?
Amazingly so, yes.
Now the battle is a bad one. But we wrestle not against flesh and blood. The battle is here, in your mind. It's pictured in the Old Testament. It's pictured in that star map. That's another, you want to see your subconscious mind? Look at that star map.
You know what I learned today? That this part of the brain, this is obvious, this part of the brain is the one that's involved in planning and time, just management stuff, and thinking about tomorrow kind of stuff. It's this
frontal
forehead. Right?
Forehead. Buried in baptism. Now again in mourning, mourning is not the hysteria that goes on at the immediate news of death. That's essentially a state of shock. Mourning is a liturgy in the ancient. And it was permitted at three times. They didn't even recognize the mourning of that when you first find out somebody died as mourning. The mourning was permitted three times. It was permitted on the third day, the seventh day, and the 40th day. Now, in the process of mourning, they did all kinds of stuff. You know, they did the same kind of stuff they do in the Fast of Ab. They turned the furniture upside down. They couldn't anoint their body. They didn't eat. They didn't drink. They didn't do anything. They just mourned. Now, most of you, especially the males, have been taught subconsciously, psychologically, that it's not macho to mourn. There is a blockage inside you that prevents you from mourning. But you know what? If necessary, God will kill me tomorrow to teach you to mourn, if that's what it would take. Blessed are they that mourn, for they shall be comforted. Go to 1 Peter chapter 3. Verse 18. You know, all the arguments in religious circles about baptism are really kind of silly. I mean, the idea of infant baptism is obscene. I mean, what the hell is that going to do for anybody to get sprinkled with water? It's like, that's part of, I mean, it's an ancient thing from Babylon, in fact, of, you know, being sprinkled with holy water. But baptism is a internalized phenomena that, unless it's experientially known, it's a meaningless gesture. It's just a liturgy. So anyway, for Christ also has once suffered for sins, for the just for the unjust, that he might bring us to God, being put to death in the flesh, but quickened by the Spirit. And quickened always means given life. By which also he went and preached unto the spirits in prison, which sometime were disobedient, when once the long-suffering of God waited in the days of Noah, while the ark was a-preparing, wherein a few, that is, eight souls, were saved by water. The like figure whereunto even baptism doth also now save us, not the putting away of the filth of the flesh, but the answer of a good conscience toward God by the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Baptism here says we are saved by baptism. But it's not the putting away of the filth of the flesh. It's so that your conscience will have an answer. Do you understand? Your conscience will have an answer by the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead. That's mind-blowing. All you're trying to do, ever since I've known you, is to put away the filth of the flesh and try to make the flesh look cleaner.
Yeah.
You know, and I've half of your conversations to me for the last 4 years have been with regard to putting away the filth of the flesh. And that's fine. But now it's time to move on. Now, read here. The like figure unto even baptism doth also now save us, not the putting away of the filth of the flesh, but the answer of a good conscience toward God by the resurrection of Jesus Christ. That means that we no longer are ever attempt to justify ourselves in the flesh. Timothy says Jesus Christ was was manifested in the flesh, but justified in the spirit. That's right. But you always try, because of this thing you call a conscience.
Yeah.
All of the conscience is the idiosyncrasies you learn before you reach the age of reason. Your conscience is bullshit. Your conscience can do nothing but condemn you by an assumed standard. And that standard is different for every culture in the world. Some cultures think that, you know, part of the culture that I grew up in terms of my associates, there was absolutely no remorse for being a con artist, because that was the best thing you could be. It's cool. There was no remorse for adultery or fornication, because that was the best there could be. Well, what the hell would my conscience do? I mean, I can justify anything by my conscience. If you have to grow up in a religious environment, you know, then you got a different kind of conscience. But your conscience is that little thing in your mind that you have all the mind talk with. Oh, it sometimes loves to get that little bugger loves to get righteous.
Well, it's great that, you know, they always have the little blurbs of the angel popping up, ding, 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 little conversations.
And it's just, all of it's bullshit. You understand me?
Mm-hmm. I understand that. I don't understand the answer of a good conscience toward God.
The only good conscience is the resurrection of Jesus Christ.
So you don't have to worry about the filth of the flesh. It's not important.
Okay, let's go another one. Go to Hebrews. It's just a little bit before 1 Peter. Okay. Hebrews 9. Verse 13. Hebrews 9:13. For if the blood of bulls and of goats and of the ashes of a heifer sprinkling the unclean sanctifieth to the purifying of the flesh, how much more shall the blood of Christ, who through the eternal Spirit offered himself without spot to God, purge, or empty, your conscience from dead works in order to serve the living God? You know, you've been taught all your life in one form or another to pay attention to your conscience. That your conscience was somehow God speaking to you. Yeah, it's God speaking to you, all right. His name is Molech. The false god of the land. All the little idiosyncrasies that your parents taught you, all the mannerisms of behavior and value systems that were foisted on you by your parents, is what you have as a conscience. That conscience must needs be purged. From all of those dead works. In order that you might serve the living God. A better translated would be that you might be of service to the living God. Again, because your conscience does a trick. Your conscience will always make you the subject. And so therefore, your dealings with God will always be along the lines of the false god, i.e., what can God do for me? What can God show me? What is God teaching me about this situation? Do you see how subtly the me becomes the subject? Rather than a statement of faith that now, because of the efficacy of Jesus Christ, now you can be of value to God. Stop worrying about God being of value to you. Now Christ said, now after that you can judge with righteous judgment. Righteous judgment doesn't mean, okay, now I'm spiritual so I get to judge you. Righteous judgment means that now I look and I see it is finished. That's the only righteous judgment there is. But you can't see that unless you mourn. You can't mourn unless you see you were buried with him in baptism. You can't be buried with him in baptism unless you see you were crucified 2,000 years ago. And there's been a liar, a usurper on the land, and it's Satan. And he's come in your name, disguised as you. Amen? Okay? I quit.
If you're lucky this time.
Yeah. Anybody have anything yet? Take it big, person.
Make your teleprompter.
Just my teleprompter.